Hi everyone, welcome back to the Start Now podcast. This is your host Nomin speaking. In today's episode, I have Rizwan Saeed, a co-founder of a multi-million dollar eyebrow and lash business in Australia. I'm so excited for you guys to hear this interview where he will be sharing how him and his wife Sandrine have built their business from a single market stall into 24 stores around Australia today. I hope you enjoy. Hi Rizwan, how are you today?
Good. How are you, Nomin?
Good. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this podcast with me.
Pleasure.
Yeah, I'm very excited. So I thought today it would be great for you to just share your success story. So Riz has a eyebrow threading company, right, in Australia?
Yes. It's a brown lashes business. Mm-hmm. We also do other services in threading. But it's all specialized and focused on brows and lashes.
I see. So tell us how you really got started with it.
So the initial idea was about starting a business, myself and my wife. So we were both doing separate jobs. I worked in IT, and my wife and business partner always worked in education, so teaching French as a foreign language. She's done masters in teaching languages, foreign languages. Mm-hmm. So we both come from different parts of the world. She comes from France, I come from India, totally different backgrounds, but we all mesh together in Perth, where we reside now. It's where it all started, where we just felt like we could do something together. And the idea was that we were both really happy with the society or the opportunity that Australia gave us. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to give something back. Mm-hmm. So we were looking to do a business that would make a positive impact to the community. And also it's a genuine service or product. So that was a category of what we were looking for. Mm-hmm. And any business that ticks those boxes, being a genuine service and a product and making a positive impact to the community, could be the category, could be the business that we would do. So after going through a fair few businesses, this is the business we chose. And we made a go of it.
Okay. So before you actually started it, did when you were considering other types of businesses, did you start one and transition to this, or you just looked at list of different options and then decided to go with eyebrow and lashes?
Eyebrow and lashes was the first one we chose. There were a few other businesses we did a little bit of homework on. Mm-hmm. And it was great because we both come from have a very different skill set or thought process as well. Mm-hmm. So my partner always she's very good at organizing and planning and putting things together. Mm-hmm. So that's the first place she would go to. And my skill set is looking at a business in its own, how the strategy works, mm-hmm. and whether we're going to be able to get the result that we're looking for. So I do the forecasting and the current situation analysis. So that's my role. So right from the start, in few of the businesses that we did research on, I could see cash flow is going to be an issue, or return on investment is so much down the track that the growth might be super, super slow and not fit our plans. So I was looking for several other scenarios or areas that were important to make sure that where we're going, where we start something that is going to get us where we want to be the most effectively. Mm-hmm. And this business just resonated with us right from the start. Mm-hmm. We only had $5,000 in cash, and that's all we had to start the business with. And that was we made it. We did it, and we grew the business. Everything, all the outlets in the shopping centers that we have right now, all started with that $5,000.
Okay, so when was that? When did you start this?
So we started the business in August 2008.
2008. Okay, so 12 years ago almost.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
I see. And with one store, and now you have 30 stores, is that correct?
Yes, we went up to 30 stores within 6.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So our mission or the business strategy was to increase the number of stores. We wanted to grow them. That was our strategy. Now, after 6.5 years, the WPF economy is mining-based economy.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been a massive shift in WA. I'm not sure the rest of the world keeps an eye on the little old WA from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been a massive shift, and it's all to do with the big industries on iron and ore and et cetera, et cetera. So that influenced our economy significantly. So straight after that, our business strategy turned towards focusing more on profit
mm-hmm.
and profitability of each outlets. Mm-hmm. So we have now reduced it down to 22 stores strategically to make sure that we are true to the profits of the business and making sure we're keeping a healthy cash flow.
Cash flow and also a quality service, right?
Correct, yes. There's several reasons for doing that, and we're in a much better place mm-hmm. for doing so.
Yeah. Okay. So it's actually very interesting that you started in 2008, because I thought eyebrow threading just became like very popular in just the recent years, in the past maybe 3 years. But or maybe because I was much younger in 2008, I didn't know much about it. Yeah.
It wasn't a big thing at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So eyebrows and lashes, particularly in Australia, the trends do come in a bit slower than the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it did happen that it didn't reach here for a few years after. But we have started the first one in Australia, which focused on the brows. And our education when we started was all about moving people away from the chemicals and of the wax.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first introduction to threading, to go, well, there is a better way. Mm-hmm. And then came out of it that people start to realize it actually does an awesome job on the eyebrow itself in the shape. Mm-hmm. And when people start to get the better shape, it just snowballed from there that other people would have a look at their eyebrows and go, wow, your eyebrows look good. Oh, yeah, there's a new thing called threading. Try that. Go to that place. And so we became the searched word on Google. People would not type eyebrow threading. They would type Zubius threading, which was our business, still is in Perth. People more type Zubius threading than eyebrow threading, which is a little bit of a compliment for someone who went there first and there to start a business in something that was not known.
Yeah, that's amazing. Zubius, that's a very unique name. What does it mean? Does it have a meaning behind it?
Yes, it does have a story behind it, not a meaning.
Okay.
So the story is that my partner's name is French.
Mm-hmm.
So she requested that it's okay that most of the Anglo-Saxon, they don't pronounce my name correctly, but at least you could pronounce my name correctly because you're my husband, so you need to at least learn.
Mm-hmm.
It is a tricky one. So her English name is Sandrine, how people would say it, Sandrine.
Mm-hmm.
But in French, it's a lot more tricky. It's called Sandrine. It took me several years to say that, and it's still a bit of a mouthful to actually pause and pronounce that correctly.
Yeah.
So I said, look, I always loved this Arabic name called Zubia.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't mind, I'll use that name to call you. And she actually liked the name herself. So, several years before the business started, I used to call my wife Zubia. And then, so that's how we said we had a ready-made name for the brand. And so she was happy as well because she's got one step away from the name, because if it was Sandrine Threading, she would never have accepted. So because it was Zubia, she said, okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
But it does mean quite a lot of things in quite a different languages. So mm-hmm. there's a meaning in Persian, there's a meaning in Arabic, there's a meaning in lots of languages. This name is kind of a common name.
Yeah, I see. Very cool. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning again. That part is still very interesting for me. You both don't have a background in beauty industry, right? So how, and especially threading was such a new idea in Australia, how did you get the skills and the talented staff who could actually do a really good job in that.
Okay, so our theory was that we need to be the best at what we sell. Mm-hmm. Then we can learn how to teach another person. Mm-hmm. So both of us went to my sister, who is in USA, in Michigan.
Okay.
And so that's where we spent some time with her. She's got a fair few outlets now in America. So she actually was kind enough to teach us and show us what she does, how she does. And she also taught us the American way of marketing, or how the malls work. It's a bit more in your face and aggressive, like people come to you and expect you to stop and talk, and which people do, and people might even buy from that. Here in Australia, it's absolute no-no, but we learned that the hard way. So anyway, the story as it goes is that we, just before we started the business, we had a trip to Europe. We extended that trip to USA. So we went to Europe to visit my in-laws for the first time. And after that, we went to USA, meet my sister, so my wife could meet my family as well. And over there, we did a bit of a training, going to the shop with her and learn and see the technique and come back with it.
Wow. So both of you learned how to thread eyebrows.
That's correct. Yeah. Well, me, I was just watching it. Because in my culture, men doing beauty services is a bit no-no. So I couldn't ask my sister to teach me, because that would be a topic on its own.
I see.
So I just watched it. And then when we got back here, it was interesting, because in my job was self-nominated. I said, like, I will get the customers in. You have learned the technique, so you can offer the service. So over time, I didn't realize I kind of gotten good at speaking with the people and learning to know their body language and adapt my conversations, etc. So I started to make a bit of a lineup waiting outside, and there's only one person serving, and it wasn't moving as fast as I would have hoped, because people bring people, and while I build a line with some hard work, and people are getting impatient, going, look, I would love to get it done, but I don't have time. See you later. So because I would have lost customers, I just started to do something very cheeky.
Okay.
Which is I start to go, well, look, I'm just going to get this person in the chair. So I got the next person in the chair. You know what? I'm going to just do your eyebrows. And so they go, oh, do you know how to do it? Yes, yes, I know how to do it. So I would do one eyebrow, because the first eyebrow you're actually doing while facing the customer, like face to face. That's kind of straightforward. And I managed to do a good job, which is, you know, I knew I would, because I've been watching and kind of practicing a little bit, but it's very different to do it on a real eyebrow. So I did a good job on the first one. And then when I went to the next one, you have to do it from behind the person. So the whole eyebrow is upside down, and you have to do it in a very different angle, different view. And that's where the skills and the experience comes into play. And every time I get to the second eyebrow, I go, wow, that's a different level altogether. So I'll say, look, I think I'm really sorry. I think I forgot to put my parking ticket. So, and then I'll have to run away. But at least that customer is kind of in the chair. And then I'll tell my partner, like, when you're done, could you please serve this person, next customer? So I should do the second eyebrow, and then I'll come back and go, oh, okay, you're already in the way, so I'm take the next customer. So that way, at least, you know, I was keeping the next person still interested and still in the service. But the moment we had a few customers empty it out, and then we had no customer in the shop, at that point, I got really clearly told that either you learn to do both eyebrows or you don't, because I'm having a tough time balancing the eyebrow, because you've done the one and I've got to do the other.
Right.
So I had to quickly learn, and I did learn. I made some mistakes, but it was kind of okay. It was a learning process, but we got there quite fast, which is good.
That's amazing. And when did you start hiring more people and training? And how was the training process? And eventually, I want to talk about the English program that you guys started as well.
Okay. So the first things we noticed is anytime we advertise for a role, it was a very big step because we're service based. So everything that we're doing, at that point, we had two stores, right? So one store was in a market, which would run Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then we had the shopping center store as well, and that ran Monday to Saturday. So we were working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday together in the shop. Then we split for Friday and Saturday. So one would go to the market store and the other one. And those are the busiest day of the week. So we'd work really hard those 2 days by ourselves. And then the third day, which is Sunday, we would work again back together. And we'd do it back all over again from Monday.
No break.
And, well, yeah. So it is. It's a life of a businessman when you start it. So it took us a long time until we could build enough clientele to actually make the first employee funds ready to actually hire someone. And so, but we were carefully measuring. So we were ready to go. Like, if we can get someone in the store, and we also save some money to do the third store. So it was a gamble. We have to kind of see what's the best time to look for a third store and then do get an employee as well to get them to actually work in one of the stores, and then we could do the third one. So that was a bit of a calculation to do at that point, which we did correctly. And that's why the third store was the biggest store we had in terms of revenue and et cetera. So the recruitment process straight away told us that we're going to have people in threading which are not, which are coming mostly from countries like India, Nepal, you know, people who are used to seeing this technique would know what it is. We had no hope to have, for instance, an Australian to come and do threading as a job because nobody grew up with that in their culture.
Right.
So with that brought in a lot of challenges about languages and et cetera, so on. We got really lucky for the first one. Because the first employee we had came from Nepal, and she was brilliant at the service, and we didn't really have to teach her, train her. We were very naive, so we got the employee in, and we said, okay, you're working from Saturday. After the interview, you're working from Saturday. So it was the first day for her. There was hardly any induction, really. And then she jumped in to start serving customers. And we start to see a little bit of a gap in how she would serve the customer, how we would serve. So she was learning from us as much as we were learning from her to see what would an employee need to know as they get into the job. And we learned more and more as we recruited more people and saw that not everybody is going to be that walk in the park that come in and start serving customers somewhere so much behind in technique. And that became the norm later on, that everybody mostly that came in after were really behind in technique, and we had to teach them and train them. We train our Achilles heel, or the number that really was difficult to move was number four employee.
Okay.
That just did not work out. For some reason, we trained 4 to 5 people and trialed them for a lengthier period of time, hoping that they will pick it up.
Right.
And none of those 5 people did. And number 4 employment was so hard to fill until we found this girl. She was again from Nepal. We managed to train her. She managed to do the skills, but her language was absolutely inexistent. So she wouldn't be able to speak in English whatsoever.
I see.
So as a program, what I did was I actually took her to the market store where I was working, and I would have her as a second person with me. And I would be there to serve if it gets too busy. But mostly what I was doing was carrying a book with me and educating her in how to speak to people. And I would let her do it, and then she'd come back, and then we would kind of explore how the conversation went, what simple things mean. Because in Nepalese and Indian languages, the big trouble is we don't have specific words that are commonly used for saying thank you and please. Those polite words only exist mostly in English, and many other languages don't necessarily have this because there's a lot of different ways of forming a sentence. So based on how you form the sentence, it automatically means it's polite or it's rude.
Right.
You don't need to use a rude word. You just say it in a way, the sentence is said in a way that it makes sense to the other person. It's rude. And right. Same for polite. You don't need to say, could you please have a seat?
Right. And it would make it impolite if you don't say please. Yeah. I totally understand that. Does she still work with you guys now?
She worked for a very long time. She worked with us 8.5 years.
Wow. Okay.
That number four position lasted a very long time.
I see.
We had our second employee only recently just moved on because she did a master's in accounting whilst having a job with us. So she worked, yeah, she did that. She got the accounting degree. Then she went to explore the accounting a bit. After 3 months' time, she said, well, you know what? I'm going to work on weekends on this business because I really miss it. Mm-hmm. Come back to us. And then she goes, well, you know what? I'm going to keep accounting on the side. I'll work full time. She worked full time. After that, she goes, well, you know what? I really think I would love this business so much. I would like to own and run this business. Can I be a franchisee?
Yes,
can be a franchisee. Then she said, well, I don't have funds. Can I still, you know, work and pay you?
Yeah.
And we said, okay, yes, you can work and pay. So we had several franchisees that way who originally came in as an employee, became a manager, loved what they did so much that they said, you want to be a franchisee. So we funded their franchising venture, if you like. So she kind of recently finished her agreement and had a couple of babies and just said, you know, I would like to take a break now.
Okay. Sounds like a one big family. So there are a lot of businesses that are going bankrupt and closing down due to this coronavirus. And a lot of them, let's talk about like small businesses or businesses that may have just started recently, and then they get hit by this very big worldwide hit, right? Do you have any advice for them?
Okay, so I can say some of the things that that are quite important. That is the reason why our business, even though it is a major operation, mm-hmm. so to speak, it's not one store, it's 24 stores, it's not 10 people, it's 80 plus people right now in our company. And we are managing this right now and can see that we will be able to manage this for a long time. Mm-hmm. We don't know how long, nobody has got the answer, but at least we have a way of working. It's because the people that we chose and the energy we invested, the culture we created, the connections we made, the care factor that we gave, all of these is now brought such a beautiful culture. People look at it, understand it, and my message, I've created a video recently just for my team to say is that no matter how many companies are going to around me think about how I'm going to cut expenses and take people out of my business and you know, say you're terminated, you're et cetera, and mm-hmm. kind of getting rid of people. Mm-hmm. We're never going to think about this. Mm-hmm. We're going to all suffer a little bit, like Simon Sinek says, suffer all a little bit, so no one person can have to suffer a lot. So let's do that. So everybody is kind of really on board. They communicate. They know what a common goal for us is, to have food on the table and employment's running. So let's not stop this machine. We can keep running it as long as we need to and as long as we can. And that outcome of that and the purpose of that is to keep the job, keep the food on the plate, and let the world crumble around us, but we can stick together and fight this. So that's my team, and that happened because happens right now is because that I've been consistent. I've shown integrity. I've shown the way to go and how we are, and they've consistently seen is what we say is what we do, and what our values are shared. So everyone's passionately behind it because, mm-hmm. again, the company goal is their personal goal right now, and could not have been more close mm-hmm. together right now.
Yeah.
So. I think, that's the past reasons. So mm-hmm. if somebody is struggling right now, if you're in the beginning of this, of your business journey, and if you're taking out a big loan, mm-hmm. Check because the governments are making a major allowances for the banks and working with the banks to actually help relieve that, you know, not having to pay interest for a few months or not having to, et cetera, et cetera. And there's also some support if someone's got a team and you have a payroll, at least in Australia I'm talking about, I would imagine that it will be common from for most of the countries, is to actually inject some cash into businesses through the employment. There's a fair bit of that going on. And there might be other typical industry-related, industry-specific support that the government might have put into place that you can look into. What I would love to say is that everything that is happening in the world is getting processed in your head. Whatever you see is happening is going in through your ear, through your eyes, and your sensories, all your sensories is what is taking it in, and how it making sense is in your brain. Right. So if you play a better game in your head, then you're always going to win. If you're going, brain is going to go, this is the end of the world and defeat. Then
it's going that's to the it. End the of game the world. Is
played in your head, right? So make sure your mental health is playing a superb game. Focus on what's the lesson to learn out of all of this. Yesterday we were lunchtime conversation with my wife, with my 8-year-old daughter, and my friend who's living with us. We were all sitting at lunch together, and the conversation we had is that we all came up with a list of things that this is happening and producing good results. What is positive happening out of this? What are we? What is the impact, the good impact on the world? And Vienna came up, like dolphins are swimming there and the water is blue and pristine right now. Has never happened. China is seeing the blue sky for the first time. Amazon is breathing. So there's loads of good things happening. So if you start to focus and collect the good parts and the positive parts and not even see as a business as a failure. Like if someone fails in the business, I just go, if I fail all of these, I'm not a bad business person. I'm not a losing business person. What have I learned from that? What is losing a business taught me to prepare me for the next stage of my life? That happened for a reason. What's the reason? And I use that for the next level. And I recommend that. Even if you see no way out and you check with the government, all of this has happened and you don't see a path forward and you keep trying. Die trying. And if the business died, no problem. You have learned, you are now several steps ahead of another business owner who's just starting, he's got no idea.
That's true.
You have a different ring to it. And I suppose those are the things. Play a better game in your head. Play a game.
I agree with you. That's amazing. Okay, so for my last question, I'm going to wrap it up after this. Is that so let's say when you just had two stores, sounds like your day-to-day routine looked like you welcoming customers and sometimes even doing their eyebrows. And now that you have 24 stores, how does your regular workday look like? Assuming that we're not, you know, having this crisis right now. So what would a regular
day on an average day look like?
Yes.
Average day. Average day, I have every day is a different day, which is what I love. And which is one of the key driver for me actually to get into business. I wanted every day to be different, full of experiences. So an average day, average week, for instance, would be very easy to explain. Monday, I start of the week, my partner and I, we go to the gym. First of all, I drop my daughter every day to school and pick up every day personally myself. I love it. That's what I passionately do. I take time out for that. So after dropping my daughter, we go to the gym Monday morning. And then generally we do meetings, with people outside the business on Monday. So the marketing person, so there are, meeting, cause we don't just run one business. We've got other businesses as well. So any businesses, any meetings that are outdoors, we do the, online or meeting people. That's that's what Monday is all about. Tuesday is a day spent with my office team at the office. So we're all together, everybody is together, and that's where we review how are we going, review what numbers make sense for the business. We got an incredible team. So it's all about bringing the numbers, mm-hmm. bringing the statistics, looking at what worked out really well and why. Mm-hmm. And if something didn't work out, numbers not great, then we talk about why that is, and we all talk about solutions together. Mm-hmm. And that happens every fortnight. Otherwise, every week we talk about what's happening projects-wise. Everybody needs assistance, cross-communication, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So Wednesday is my kite surfing day. So I just don't do anything else. Okay. I try not to anyway. Uh-huh. I sometimes work until the wind comes in Australia. In Perth, we get it around midday.
Okay.
So I go out to the ocean. That's the day for me. And I do some extreme sports to actually really disengage.
I see. And so Wednesday, you usually do it alone?
No. I've got another friend who's also running a business, mm-hmm. Also passionate about kitesurfing. Mm-hmm. We both go out and absolutely disconnect. So
that's amazing.
The world can catch on fire. Uh-huh. We will be on the water and we'll be kite surfing. That's what I went last Wednesday.
Yeah. How long have you been doing that? Having a full day off?
4 or 5 years. It's okay. Not about a full day off. Mm-hmm. I think it's about doing something that is fully disengaging.
Right.
So when you're on the ocean, you have no phone, no tablet, no chance, because mm-hmm. you've got this kite attached to you and you're on your board. Not mm-hmm. that I would wish to have a phone on me, but it's you and the elements. That's it. Mm-hmm. So over there, we are also pushing hard and learning new things. And yes, you get some injuries, but we're always learning. We're always pushing. Mm-hmm. So we enjoy really that segment. It could go up to 4 hours mm-hmm. generally, mm-hmm. But it is very intense physical exercise. So at the end of it, you are absolutely, energy is drained and it's beautiful feeling. Mm-hmm. I used to come back and work a little bit, but my wife said, do not touch work because I cannot think straight anymore because I'm so relaxed.
Yeah,
I'm doing my email, but my email doesn't answer the question. Or just go, you know what? Just don't do it. Just chill out. So I do things, physical work uh-huh. around the house or whatever, just to keep myself going. Or mm-hmm. I learn guitar. Mm-hmm. I sit down and spend time daily. I spend a little bit of time on learning new things on guitar. Mm-hmm. Wednesday, then Thursday is generally a combination of catching up with all the emails. Having meetings. Thursday could be a long day for us as well because we work till late on Thursday in the mm-hmm. shopping center. So mm-hmm. Thursday varies between catching up on office works, meetings, and a hybrid of getting things done. Mm-hmm. Friday is generally a reflection day. So how did the week go? What are the other things, etc., mm-hmm. etc. Saturday and Sunday, sadly, is still a combination of family time and work. Mm-hmm. We have other businesses meetings happen on a Sunday morning mm-hmm. in our backyard. We sit down, mm-hmm. take time, reflect on all the businesses, mm-hmm. Just myself and my partner, mm-hmm. and then create a strategic plan or activities from there on. Mm-hmm. And then Sunday, we try not to do anything, go in fresh on Monday.
Yeah. May I ask, what are the other businesses that you guys started?
So apart from Zubia's Threading, we have created a mentoring business that's branded around me. Okay. And Sandrine actually is in the back end marketing and doing all of that. And I do the mentoring. Okay. The next business is called Beauty Try, which is a new concept that my team is actually at the head office. They're passionate about mm-hmm. building, and it was originally their idea. They want to do something new, which is all the systems and the processes that we have in our Zubia's business are ideal for any service-based industry mm-hmm. or brand. So we are preparing a system where mm-hmm. people can subscribe mm-hmm. as a business mm-hmm. at a very low fee mm-hmm. and benefit from all the ongoing marketing or systems and processes that we have in place that serves us for several sites, mm-hmm. let alone just one site. If they have got one or two shops, that will be absolutely suit them and fit them. So it's called Beauty Tribe, mm-hmm. A shared membership platform. Okay. Then we have another friend of mine who is from Turkey, who has this golden tahini.
Okay.
It's a tahini that you can get nowhere else in the world. It's a very, very unique place in Turkey that gets this kind of tahini. It's literally golden in color. It's not, I don't know if you've seen tahini, it's a sesame seeds.
Mm-hmm.
It's a paste of sesame seeds. It looks like pale yellow.
Okay.
In the shops. But this one is golden rich.
Okay.
Texture, color. And because it is wood fire roasted or smoked roasted tahini, is a very unique traditional process. So that product is an absolute must in health in the industry right now. And we are building his brand with him as a partner.
I see.
And we're doing quite well, actually, considering we only started a month ago.
Oh, wow.
So it's a different venture altogether. Mm-hmm. And then there is something else coming up as well as a potential for us to franchise with another brand.
Mm-hmm.
It's again a friend of ours who started like us, who was just a couple of years after us when we started. He respects us as what we do and how we did and how we grew the brand. And we admire him because he's done a fantastic job with his brand as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just to have multiple industries under our belt, we're actually planning to franchise with him to actually have another industry. Right. That's kind of where we're at. I think that's kind of enough businesses.
Yeah, that's a lot. So if someone who is listening to this and they can tell that you give great advice, right, and they want to get mentored, where can we find you?
You can find us easily on LinkedIn.
Okay.
I've got an easy profile to find, and I'm good at responding on those messages as well. So just jump on LinkedIn and just message me through there.
Okay.
Right now, actually, for businesses who are going through this difficult time with the virus, I've actually put my hand up to say I'm allocating 2 to 3 hours of my day towards people to actually engage with me and ask any questions. I assure that I'm not as good as Buddha or somebody who's a divine person who spent their lifetime figuring out things.
Right.
But if I can help you in any way, might be even a tiny bit of way, or even listen to what people have to say and hear their concern, then I'll be very happy to give my time. And there is a catch to it. You'd read on my LinkedIn profile. The catch is that if I'm giving you my time for free to support and help you and do a good deed, then I would like you to commit as well to do the same for the next person. That what you can offer. So we can at least create a chain of people looking after each other in this environment.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Okay. Very good. So thank you so much for giving me your family day Sunday and to speak with me. Do you have any last words that you would like to share?
Yes.
Yes.
Life is like a car that you're driving in. The passengers are going to change. The scenery is going to change. It's going to be beautiful sunshine with the beach on the side sometimes. And it's going to be absolute hail and storm and really bad visibility sometimes. But one thing is constant in life, which is change. So the more we appreciate that anything is going to, and everything is going to change. And what is important to know is that nothing is permanent. So right now, if you feel that it is a difficult time and our life has been evident that change is permanent, like change is going to continue to happen, but this stage right now will also change. It's also a matter of time. So just focus on the fact that everything changes and you might be able to cope with what's happening right now a lot better.
Yes. That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Riz.
No worries, guys. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.